listening to Lake Radio. Lake Radio.
Hello, my name is Kane, and welcome to season 5 of Lake Radio. In honor of Halloween, we will be sharing our interpretation of two of the more frightening tales in American literature. So sit back in your easy chair by the fireplace and let us weave our tales of woe for your enjoyment.
First up, we have a tale full of revenge and deceitfulness, brought to you by Joshua Walls and producer Jacob Marcica.
The Castle of Montalto by Edgar Allan Poe. Fortunato had hurt me 1,000 times and I've suffered quietly. But then I learned that he had left my proud name, Montresor, the name of an old and honored family. I promised myself that I would make him pay for this, that I would have my revenge. You must not suppose, however, that I spoke to this tenderman. I will make him pay, yes, but I will only act with the greatest care. I must not suffer as a result of taking my revenge. A wrong is not made in the right manner. And also the wrong would not be made right unless Fortunato knew that he was paying. And knew he was forcing him to pay. I gave Fortunato no cause to doubt me. I continued to smile in his face, and he did not understand I was smiling at the thought that what I planned for him, at the thought of my revenge. Fortunato was a strong man, a man to be feared, but he had one great weakness. He liked to drink good wine, and indeed he drank much of it. So he knew a lot about fine wines, and probably believed that he was a trained judge of them. I, too, knew old wines as well. And I bought the best that I could find. And wine, I thought, wine would give me my revenge. It was almost dark, one evening in the spring, when I met Fortunato in the street alone. He spoke to me, more warmly than usual. For already he drank more wine than was good for him. I acted pleased to see him. I shook his hand, as if he'd been my closest friend. Fortunato, how are you?
Montresor, good evening, my friend.
My dear Fortunato, I'm indeed glad that I met you. I was just thinking of you, for I've been tasting my new wine. I've bought a full cask of fine wine, which they tell me is Amontillado, but...
Amontillado, quite impossible.
I know, it does not seem possible, but I could not find you, and I was just going to tell Lucchesi. If anyone understands wine is Lucchesi, he'll tell me.
Lucchesi, he does not know one wine from another.
But they say he knows as much as wine is about you.
Oh, come, let us go.
Go where?
To your vaults to taste the wine.
No, my friend, no. I can see that you are not well. And the vaults are cold and wet.
I do not care. Let us go. I'm well enough. The cold is nothing. Amontillado. Someone is playing games with you. And Lucchesi. Ha! Lucchesi knows nothing about wines. Nothing at all.
As he spoke, Fortunato took my arm. I allowed him to hurry me to my great stone palace, where my family and the Montresors have lived for centuries. There was no one at home. I had told the servants that they must not leave the palace, as I would return until following morning, and must care for the place. This, I knew, was enough to make it certain that they would leave as soon as my back was turned. I took down from their places on the wall two brightly burning lights. I gave one of these to Fortunato and led him to a wide doorway. There we could see the stone steps going down into the darkness, asking him to be careful as we followed. I went down before him and down onto the ground, deep under the old walls of my palace. We came finally to the bottom of the steps and stood there a moment together. The earth which formed the floor was cold and hard. We were entering the last resting place of the dead of the Montresor family. And here too we kept our finest wines, here in a cool, dark, still air under the ground. Fortunato's step was not sure because of the wine he had been drinking. He looked uncertainly around him, trying to see through the thick darkness which pushed in around us. Here our brightly burning lights seemed weak indeed, but our eyes soon became used to the darkness. We could see the bones of the dead lying in large piles along the walls. The stones of the walls were wet and cold. From the long rows of bottles which were lying on the floor among the bones, I chose one which contained a very good wine. Since I did not have anything to open with the bottle, I struck the stone wall, broke the small end of it. I offered the bottle to Fortunato. Here, Fortunato, drink some of this fine Medoc. It'll help to keep us warm. Drink.
Thank you, my friend. I drink to the dead who lie sleeping around us.
And I, Fortunato, I drink to your long life.
Ah, very fine wine indeed. But the Amontillado.
We walked on for some time. We were now under the river's bed, and water fell in drops upon us from above. Deeper into the ground we went, past still more bones.
Your vaults are many and large. There seems to be no end to them.
We are a great family, and an old one. It is not far now, but I can see you are trembling with cold. Come, let us go back before it's too late.
It is nothing. Let us go on. But first, another drink of your Medoc.
I took up from among the bones another bottle. It was another fine wine with fine quality. A de grave. Again, I broke off the neck of the bottle. Fortunato took it and drank it, all without stopping from a breath. We laughed and threw the bottle over our shoulder. We went on deeper and deeper into the earth. Finally, we arrived at the vault in which the air was old and heavy, that our lights almost died. Against three walls, there were piles of bones higher than our heads. From the fourth wall, someone had pulled down all the bones, and they were spread all over around us. In the middle of the wall was opening into another vault. If I could call it that, a little room about 3 feet wide, 6 or 7 feet high, and perhaps 4 feet deep. It was hardly more than a hole in the wall. Go on, I said. Go in. The Amontillado is in there. Fortunato continued to go forward uncertainly. I followed him immediately. Soon, of course, he reached the back wall. He stood there a moment, facing the wall, surprised and wondering. In that wall were two heavy iron rings. A short chain was hanging from one of these, and a lock from another. Before Fortunato could guess what was happening, I closed the lock and chained him tightly to the wall. I stepped back. Fortunato, I said, put your hand against the wall. You must feel how the water runs over it. Once more, I ask you, please, will you not go back? No. If not, then I must leave you. But first, I must do everything I can for you.
But the Amontillado.
Ah, yes. Yes, indeed, the Amontillado. As I spoke these words, I began to search among the bones. Throwing to a side, I found the stones which earlier I'd taken down the wall. Quickly, I began to build the wall again, covering the hole where Fortunato stood trembling.
Montresor, what are you doing?
I continued working. I could hear him pulling the chain, shaking it wildly. Only a few stones remained to put in their place.
Montresor, this is a very good joke indeed. Many times we will laugh about it as we drink our wine together.
Of course, as we drink the Amontillado.
Is it not late? Should we not be going back? They will certainly be expecting us. Let us go.
Yes, let us go. As I said this, I lifted the last stone from the ground.
Montresor, for the love of God.
Yes, for the love of God. I heard no answer. Fortunato, I cried. Fortunato. I heard only a soft, low sound, a half cry of fear. My heart grew sick. It must have been cold. I hurried to force the last stone into its position. And I put the old bones again in a pile against the wall. For half a century, now, no human hand has touched them. May he rest in peace.
And now, a suspenseful tale about a man and his bird by Ralph Holly and Hunter Doyle.
The Raven, the Raven, the Raven, the Raven, the Raven, the Raven, Allan Poe, Allan, Allan Poe. Poe.
Once upon a midnight jury, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow. Sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. Some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping. And so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door. That I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door, darkness there, and nothing more." Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore!" This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore!" Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window that is. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more." Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, and there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisances made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of palace just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird, beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore, "Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou," I said, "art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such a name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, Nevermore. Startled at the stillness, broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock in store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, to the dirges of his hope, that melancholy burden bore, of never, nevermore. But the raven still beguiling all my fancy into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and busting door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking, nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er. But whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, ah, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumes from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee, respite, respite and nepenthe, from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by the heaven that bends above us, by the God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden, it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word a sign in parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked upstarting, get thee back into the tempest and the night's plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul has spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door, quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out the shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted, nevermore.
Thanks for listening, and check us out on iTunes and olakeradio.com. And remember...
Everybody. my